8th.
Sorry.
And this is Orange County Water District's Communication and Legislative Liaison Committee meeting. I'm going to call the meeting to order. Can we please have roll call?
Roll call, Director Bilodeau, Director Tran, Director Yeo,
Here.
Director Whitaker, Director Sheldon, Director Amezcua,
Present.
Director Meeks, Director Nguyen, Director Wyhand,
Here.
Director Green.
Here.
You do have a quorum of your committee.
Okay.
Okay, thank you. Do we have any items received too late to be agendized?
Sure.
Okay, any visitors' participation? Guess seeing none, hearing none. Okay. All right, the first item that we have is our consent calendar, which is the just the minutes from the June meeting. What's the
I
committee's pleasure?
move it.
I'll second.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. Roll call, please.
Roll call, Director Yeo.
Yes.
Director Mesqua.
Yes.
Director Wigand.
I'll abstain because I was absent.
Director Green.
Yes.
Okay, that motion carries with three yes votes, with Director Wigand abstaining.
Okay, thank you. Oh, I'm sorry, my alarm is testing. Quickly, let's go to item number two, state legislative update.
Well, good afternoon. Thank you, Jason Gonsalves. I'll start off with the general update, and I'll try to be brief because I know you have far more important items later on the agenda, like our contracts. But in all seriousness, we will plan to sign off for that portion of the agenda. Very briefly, the legislature had been on summer recess. They just returned August 5th, but prior to adjourning on July 3rd, there was a lot of question we had previously reported on surrounding a possible water bond, or climate bond, we'll call it, SB 867. And the governor's position on the climate bond was also in question prior to the summer recess. Well, the legislature did pass a $10 billion climate bond that will go before the voters. And much to unusual circumstances, the governor and the lieutenant governor being out of the state, they passed the climate bond, and then the president pro tem, Senator McGuire, signed the climate bond as acting governor that same day. Obviously, the governor's office has to give a signal, or you would expect they gave a signal for the acting governor to sign the climate bond, but we had the president pro tem sign the climate bond before the summer recess. And then, just very briefly, as I mentioned, the legislature is back as of Monday. They have the final 4 weeks. We're in the second year of a 2-year session, so it's sine die, midnight on August 31st. There's 1,350 bills. It's always fast and furious in August of the second year of a 2-year session with sine die. This year's complicated. Not a big complication with August 31st being the Saturday before Labor Day. The larger complication is the Monday through Thursday, August 19th through 22nd, which is the Democratic National Convention in Chicago, and which members go and how much work can be done. The assembly has noted they will send a delegation, but anytime you send a delegation, however many members leave, that's that many less votes on the floor as you're trying to wrap up 1,350 bills. One last tidbit, the appropriations committees met this week. The assembly had 500 bills. The Senate had 300. Most of those 800 bills went to suspense, and we'll know on or before August 16th which bills come off of suspense. So with that, I'll stop there, turn it over to the dynamic duo, Don and Jason, for SB 1255, or answer any questions you may have, other than which members are going to the DNC.
Thank you, Jason. Any question for Jason? All right. Thank you.
All right.
Go ahead, Don. Thank you.
Oh, sorry. Thank you, Mr. Chair and directors. I'm going to give Summary of SB 1255 by Senator DeRazzo from who represents portions of Los Angeles. There's kind of two broad portions of this bill. The first one is it requires the State Water Board to update a needs analysis for low-income ratepayers who receive water from retail water suppliers. That one's not particularly controversial. The rest of the bill would establish a low-income rate assistance program known as a LIRA program to provide assistance to eligible low-income ratepayers. And I think eligibility is at or below 200% of the federal poverty limit. And that program needs to be up and running by July 1, 2027. So the bill applies to retail water suppliers that serve 3,300 at least, or I think more, at least 3,301 residential connections. And it would impose a fee on residential ratepayers on their bills who are not low income. And that fee would be used to pay a portion of low income ratepayers' water bills. In particular, is that it's an opt-out program. They describe it as a voluntary program, but it automatically is imposed on ratepayers who are not low income, and then they would have to take an active steps to opt out of that fee, assuming they're aware of the fee at all, which could be an issue. This is the primary concern that a lot of the water community in Sacramento has with the bill. The bill does contain an opt-in framework, but it's largely not workable. So it's sort of window dressing in the view of many. Other problems with the bill, a couple other problems, is that, you know, you have to stand up the program before you have any money flowing for the programs, and there's no identifiable source of funding, you know, to stand up a program. And then the proponents, which are Clean Water Action and some other similar stakeholders, they assert that there's no Proposition 218 issue with the bill because it's again, quote unquote, voluntary. But that remains to be seen. I think ultimately, you know, a court would have to decide that. The bill is currently on the Assembly Appropriations Committee suspense file. The committee analysis indicates about $700,000 in costs. I think their annual costs. That bill will be heard as part of the suspense file on August 15th. So we'll find out if it passes with amendments that the committee imposes, or if it's held on suspense. Among other opposition is AQUA and CMUA. They have opposed unless amended positions. And I think the primary amendment they're looking for is a clean, simple opt-in program rather than what's currently in the bill. So happy to answer any questions.
Are there any questions? Thank you, Don. Oh, yes, go ahead. I will yield to our esteemed chair.
Thank you, Director Yeo. Are there any questions for Don?
I just had a quick one on the opposed unless amended list. Is it incumbent on us to, and just a newer director asking on some of these bigger ones, like I think this bill is, should we talk to some of our water suppliers too and ask them to get on lists to oppose? Because it seems like somewhat of a small list of groups that are opposing unless amended.
Irvine Ranch Water District is an opposed unless amended.
Yeah, I see them.
And Christine Compton is also on this call.
But like, you know, there's other providers, other cities too that possibly could. You know, there's only three cities on there. I don't know how helpful Newport Beach would be on a list, but you know, there's other cities that directors represent too. And just, I don't know what the process is for trying to ask some of our other producers.
We do send out emails to our producers and ask them time to time, so we could always do that too.
Yeah.
Right. Aqua sent out an alert, didn't
it?
So maybe the list will just grow, and this is just the newer. We're on top of it more than some of the other. Just to build on to it.
I can send an email out to our producers, though, if you like.
It just seems kind of like a bigger one.
Okay.
That's an excellent suggestion. I can bring it to my council as well.
Yeah, I'm happy to. For mine, I don't know how much it helps with more fluent city like Newport Beach, but, you know, I would think like seeing an orange on there would be a good one. Maybe an Anaheim would be a good one.
Because we're not so fluent.
I can interject.
Sorry, my bad.
You left it wide open. Okay.
Roger had his hand raised.
Yes, Roger.
I just have a question quickly. Don, you mentioned that there is no identified funding source. And if so, was it going to come from general funds, or was it going to rob other ratepayers to fund this?
Good questions. And it's literally not identified. I don't think it defaults to the general fund, certainly. I think there's an argument that if the state cares about this issue, it should be general fund money, but that's not in the bill. So it's just silent on funding, and that's a problem.
Well, and Director Yeo, one thing to add, Senator Dodd had a similar bill in 2022, SB 222, and that was vetoed by the governor for lack of a funding source. So it's an ongoing question.
Okay, very good. Thank you.
And if I could also just to the comment about getting other agencies opposed, I think a lot of AQUA and CMEA members have, for whatever reason, chosen, and this is not at all criticism, chosen to let, you know, the associations be the public face of the opposition. But for sure, if there ends up being floor fights in the floor of the Assembly, floor of the Senate on a bill like this, which easily could be the case, there's certainly value in having more opposition so that members on the floor, we can bring to their attention that one of the, you know, the cities or districts in their legislative district, one or more oppose. That does make it easier to lobby a bill when you have a floor fight. So that was a question, is what I guess I'm trying to say.
Okay. Anything further?
Not for my report.
Do we need a motion?
Great. I think we do need a motion.
I don't think I can vote now.
Okay.
I'll make the recommendation.
You have priority over me.
No, I put myself last.
Oh, you're last. Okay.
Okay, Director Yeo makes a motion, and I will second that motion. And we'll need a roll call vote.
Roll call, Director Bilodeau?
Yes.
Director Yeo?
Yes.
Director Mezqua?
Yes.
Director Wiegand?
Yes.
Director Green?
Yes.
That motion carries 5-0.
Okay. And Jason, had you already given your report, Jason?
I have. Thank you.
Okay. Regrettably, I missed it. I'll have to.
Do you want to hear it again? I'm happy to repeat it for you.
No, I'm good. Okay.
Dennis, in a nutshell, the big question in Sacramento is who in the Democratic Party in both houses is going to the DNC, and how are they going to get the end of session wrapped up with that number of members missing that Monday through Thursday, right before the final week of session? So that's the excitement in Sacramento.
Wow. Tough problems. Okay. That will bring us to item number 3, which is our federal legislative update.
Well, thank you, Chair Bilodeau, and good afternoon, everybody. And could I just say off the top, Jason, you guys don't know how to do your job right. We are now officially a silent, swampy, quiet, whatever city, as everybody has evacuated. All right. So I've got a couple of quick updates for the committee, and then I'll be happy to talk about the two items that have been agendized for support. Appropriations, we have spending bills that for the year that begins on October 1 through the House and basically through the Senate Committee on Appropriations. Top line differences, the House imposes a 20% cut on EPA, translates to roughly $1.9 billion, of which about $1 billion comes off the top of the State Revolving Loan Fund Program. But you have to take into account the fact that there's another $9 billion coming into EPA through the infrastructure law funding. So at the end of the day, yeah, there's a reduction in the House number for SRF, but it's minor relative to the overall spending that's going to come in to the agency. There is a need survey allotment of about $1.5 million to get the agency to do a careful survey of water and wastewater needs across the country. That has been done in a number of years that will then inform Congress on what the funding levels need to be going into the out years. From a Senate perspective, there is basically status quo funding at EPA, no big cuts. And that's basically because the Senate, as the Senate is prone to do, has added about $40 billion in, quote, emergency spending on top of the annual spending limits. So they've got the money to play with. At the end of the day, when they do a final budget deal, hopefully in November or December after the general election, they'll come to terms with a spending bill for EPA that is essentially status quo. For the Bureau of Reclamation, for its water recycling, desalinization, drought response, and resilience project funding, status quo funding in both bills, essentially $30 to $60 million for Water Smart, for drought resiliency planning activities, for water recycling. So I think from a sort of water supply perspective, all good stuff in both the House and the Senate spending bills for the Bureau of Reclamation. And interestingly, the Corps of Engineers, they got an extra $2 billion above the president's request in the House bill. And similarly, in large increases in the Senate appropriations bill. So the Corps of Engineers are going to have a boatload of money if the numbers survive a conference committee later this fall. So that's the top line numbers, all relatively good. I wanted to point out a couple of report items or directives that are contained in the spending bill known as a report. On PFAS, the House bill has a couple of key directives to the agency, EPA. One, they want to hear from the agency and the Government Accountability Office on the impact of the 4 parts per trillion PFAS drinking water standard, impacts being the economic consequences for water agencies and the compliance costs. The second thing they want to know about is the cost or the justification of the 4 parts per trillion number, how it was arrived at, the science. And then the last thing they wanted to have is an explanation to Congress about the numbers of agencies that are considered at risk. I use the words at risk of being caught up in compliance with the new 4 parts per trillion. If you wanted to say, why are they asking for all this information at this point in the sort of rulemaking process, because the rule became effective on July 8th, I think part of it is frustration by Congress. The agency hasn't been forthcoming on what the costs really are for compliance with the new standard. The second thing is, as we've talked about in the past, the American Water Works Association and Association of Metropolitan Water Agency and others have filed lawsuits against EPA on the drinking water standard, trying to uncover what the costs really are for compliance, as well as this underlying science that justified the 4 parts per trillion number. And I think these directives to EPA are in some part an effort to get that data out there for the court cases. The other thing that is in the spending bill that will be helpful for us is language. And this language was promoted by Representative Daryl Issa from the San Diego area that basically demands that EPA provide a report to Congress on the progress of its implementation of its municipal discretionary enforcement policy to protect water agencies, wastewater agencies from liability due to the designation of PFAS as a hazardous substance under Superfund or CERCLA. So that is another example of getting some real information from EPA and holding their feet to the fire, if you will, to make certain they do what they said they're going to do with respect to protecting water sector interests until such time as Congress deals with legislative language on liability. I'll get to that in a second. The The last thing I would mention on funding in general is timing. You've got, and this impacts your earmark. I think we've talked in the past. Representative Kim was very successful in getting you one of the highest earmarks for PFAS cleanups in the EPA spending bill. That number, while it's very high relative to other numbers, it's still a low number. It's about a million and some change, I think 1.1 million in direct funding for OCWD, but another million for Santa Ana. So the total number coming to your part of the world is approximately 2.2 million. And while that's not as high as we would have liked, it's one of the highest numbers that were provided in the EPA spending bill for PFAS cleanups. On the Senate side, there is no earmark for the Water District, for Santa Ana, or for any other agencies that were seeking PFAS cleanup assistance. For some reason, and I think it's a function of a priority for low-income water assistance funding, Senators Padilla and Butler only asked for nine project, or actually only received nine projects for funding, and they ranged from a couple hundred thousand to about $800,000 thereabouts, none of which were for PFAS cleanup, all of which for severely disadvantaged community water sector needs, infrastructure needs. So what does this mean? When they do come together for a conference and compromise out a final spending bill, I'm going to go out on a limb and say I'm pretty comfortable, given the history of earmarks, that your earmarks will survive, simply because the Congress tends in both chambers not to start cutting or denying another chamber's earmark requests, simply because if you do that, the other chamber says, okay, what's good for you, it's good for us, we're going to start cutting yours. So I think, I'm not saying it's done deal, but I think we're in a very good position to get funding to continue the PFAS cleanup with federal assistance. So that's where we are on general funding issues in the FY25 spending bill. Finally, timeline. I said we'll be doing a final spending bill agreement, hopefully in November, December. There is the outside chance that they may delay funding decisions until January, depending on how the general election turns out. That's just an FYI. I'm not going to make any predictions. I'm just going to say, hopefully we get a final spending bill by December at the latest. So that's where we are on appropriations and the impact to Orange County Water District. PFAS legislation, unfortunately, we're still in a holding pattern. The Senate and Committee on Environment and Public Works staff continue to try to figure out what the definition of a PFAS receiver is. However, I did have a chance to meet with Senator Padilla's staff on PFAS liability in the last couple of weeks. It was an interesting conversation. It's clear they understand and accept that something has to be done on liability exposure. They understand that it's not about EA ultimately going after water agencies, but rather third-party litigation and exposure thereof. What they said is, and I told them that, you know, we across the board want to have a liability protection that is workable and does not reward, shall we call it, abusive practices or gross negligence on the part of somebody who's involved in dealing with PFAS or PFAS cleanups. They said, that's interesting. We've never heard that before. And I found that somewhat surprising because I always have agreed that there should be strong guardrails to protect against letting somebody, shall we say, out of jail because they didn't adhere to their underlying responsibilities, whether it's the Safe Drinking Water Act, the Clean Water Act, or what have you. So what I said to them was I would compare notes, and I say this out loud for Director Green's awareness, that I would compare notes with AQUA on this issue. And I spoke with Ian Lyle, and we're going to start putting together some kind of a draft letter to Padilla arguing for the importance of a PFAS liability protection for the water sector, specifically water suppliers, and basically say that we're all on board with strong guardrails to protect against abusive practices. Bottom line, we are hopeful, I've said this too many times, but we are hopeful that we'll see language start floating around from the committee when they return to work in September. That's after September 9th. And if that happens, it'll be an opportunity for us to provide comments to the Committee on Environment Public Works in anticipation of something happening in the lame duck session. And then very quickly on the House side, not much. I mean, we have H.R. 7944, which was introduced on a bipartisan basis to essentially say the water sector and contractors that are supporting the water sector in dealing with PFAS shall be held not liable relative to the PFAS designation. That's a marker bill. Again, we'll see what happens. They're going to wait in the House for the Senate to do something. So that's where we are there. And then I quickly, if I could, Chair, just go over two other items. One is low-income housing water assistance program. Senator, this is Senator Padilla's top priority when it comes to sort of focusing on issues on a programmatic basis. He has language that he hopes to add to the National Defense Authorization Act that would renew or extend the authorization of this program that was created during the pandemic. That would simply just extend the timeline that EPA and the Health and Human Services Department could use or extend funding assistance to water agencies. I know it doesn't direct you folks directly, but it helps your producers. And then the senator is still trying to get approximately $500 million into the FY25 appropriations bill for the Health and Human Services account to continue to support low-income assistance. And then finally, he does have a bill, S-3840, and then a corresponding bill, H.R. 8032, in the House of Representatives that would establish a permanent low-income water assistance program. Those bills have not gone anywhere yet, but they're the kind of bills that could perhaps go forward in a lame duck session if they put together a whole bunch of what we call cats and dogs bills. And then lastly, I don't know, Chair, if you want me or Alicia, if you want me to get into the bills that are before the committee, or should I stop right there and answer any questions?
You want to get into the bills?
Mm-hmm. Yes, sir, yeah. Can do that.
Why don't you go ahead, Eric? I don't see any questions.
Okay, so you got two bills. One is S-4673, sponsored by Kristen Sinema, and Senator John Cornyn. Cornyn is from Texas. Sinema is the independent from Arizona. And there is a corresponding bill that has passed the House of Representatives, H.R. 7505. None of your members of the delegation, except for Katie Porter, are sponsors of the House bill, just an FYI. What this does is effectively says, for purposes of eligibility for programs that provide assistance to local governments, special districts would be defined as local governments. At the end of the day, I'm not convinced, and I've spoken to Alicia and Gina about this, I'm not convinced it really delivers any benefit to the Orange County Water District, because this is really about sort of things like the CARES Act that was enacted into law during the pandemic that basically provided financial assistance for, recovering from the pandemic, economic assistance and what have you for cities and towns. That being said, if we, God forbid, had another pandemic or another real disaster, this theoretically, if enacted into law, would offer another avenue, if you will, for OCWD to get some assistance if it applied. But from a, what does it mean on the ground today if it were enacted? Probably not much, because you have your dedicated SRF program, you have your dedicated WIFIA program, and you have your dedicated grants programs that make water districts eligible at the Bureau of Reclamation and elsewhere. But as I've said, it's not a bad bill, and there's no harm or foul by supporting it, and you might make friends with some of the Special District Association folks.
Okay.
I've also heard that it would make us eligible for other pots of money like FEMA directly, and we wouldn't have to go through like the county. So there might be other things in the future that could be helpful with this direct funding.
That's right.
Okay.
The second bill, which is not a bill yet, is a proposed bill to be by Senator Alex Padilla that for this conversation, and I think it's in your briefing materials, essentially is sort of a embellishment or an improvement on the FIRO program right now. And it basically would authorize, as I understand the bill, the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration the ability to take more specific actions to support modeling and predicting and sort of alerting folks to atmospheric rivers and their impacts. Again, this is not a bill. It would give NOAA a little bit more clout in addressing atmospheric rivers that would then obviously improve the data, the information that you folks might want to rely on when it comes to water conservation. Again, it's not a bill yet, but in conversations with Alicia and Gina and Scripps Institute, we have learned, there's nothing negative about the bill. My only point was and remains that this is me being cautious. We don't see the final bill text yet, and I'm sure the final bill text will be just fine because Scripps is involved and they know what they want, and it's usually to the OCWD's benefit. But that's the only issue, which is you don't have a final text yet. But in concept, supporting it is a good thing.
Eric, going back to Padilla, at the Water Infrastructure Summit, in his talk, he did say that he was in support of protecting water districts from liability in PFAS cases. And it was the first time I had ever heard him definitively say that. He's always said, he was inclined, he would look at, but this one, he just came out and said he was in favor. So I don't know if that helped, but I'm glad you're working with Ian.
Yes. Excellent point. I glossed over it. I guess what I would say is that is emblematic of what we're hearing from other offices also. We started this fight years ago, it seems like. we used to get this sort of like arm, like stay away from me. I don't want to hear about it. We don't believe it's an issue. Now, without exception, the Democrats on the Environment and Public Works Committee have started saying exactly that, Director Green, which is President Green, that is that we recognize it's an issue, recognize it's a problem, and we recognize we got to do something about it. The challenge we have right now is that members on the committee are waiting for Chairman Tom Carper and ranking Republican Capito from West Virginia to reach an agreement amongst themselves that they can be presented to the committee as a bipartisan compromise. But we're hopeful that will happen.
Okay.
Do we need a motion?
Yes.
So moved.
Okay, we have a motion. I'll second the motion. And the motions to take the recommended actions and bring it to the board meeting on August 21st.
Yes.
Okay.
Roll call. Director Bilodeau?
Yes.
Director Yeo?
Yes.
Director Mesqua?
Yes.
Director Wigand?
Yes.
Director Green?
Yes.
That motion carries 5-0.
Great. That brings us to item number 4. State Legislative Advocacy Services. And I would say our state advocates can stay or they can go. It's your option. It's a public meeting.
I would think we'll sign off at
we'll
this
give you
juncture.
Your privacy. Okay. Thank you, though.
Thank you very much.
And Chair Bildo?
Unless you need a motion, we're happy. Never mind.
Chair Bildo, could I be excused too so we don't have to go
yes,
through
sir.
Thank you, another joke.
Thank you, everyone.
Bye-bye. Right.
Thank you. Okay, so this is for the renewal of our state legislative advocacy service contracts.
Yes.
Gina, did you want to hear this little summary?
Sure. Thank you, Chair Bildo. So for the state contracts, they do expire at the end of this month. So Randy's group and finance, they do need approval from the board to allow more funds in there. So the recommendation is to continue on and go to a month-to-month basis, which gives the board flexibility to bring this item up at any time. But already in the existing contracts, there's a clause that it can be ended as well, you know, for 30 days notice. So the recommendation is just to move forward on a month-to-month basis of the contracts as they are.
Okay. And it looks like this is just a slight bump up already.
It's not, it's, no, the, it's same. The same. You know what it was, why there's a difference? Excuse me. Last time around, there was a slight bump up. But we forgot to put that in the budget line. So that's just, yeah, that's just okay. My error. So it's the same, still 8,000 for each.
All right. And our advocates are happy. I mean, they're.
Yes, they are.
So good. Moved.
Okay, then that's it. And I'll second. I mean,
unless anybody.
I'll second. I think that we're well served by.
I agree.
Yeah.
Okay. If you can call the roll, madam.
Okay, roll call. Director Bilodeau?
Yes.
Director Yo?
Yes.
Director Mesquita dropped off. Director Wigand?
Yes.
Director Green?
Yes.
That motion carries 4-0.
Okay, that brings us to the Federal Advocacy Services. And Gina, take it away.
Sure, Director Bilodeau. So that would be the same as our state. The federal contract expires at the end of August, so we do need board approval to get funds in there, and the recommendation is to move it forward on a month-to-month basis.
Okay, it looks like it's the same
rate. The same rate of $8,000 per month, yes.
Why don't we just send a full contract? Is there any reason to wait? I mean, there's no questions, no...
Well, you mean the full two-year?
Yeah.
That's to the discretion of the board.
Is there a problem with that?
I don't have a problem with it. And it actually should probably match the legislative session, right? I mean,
yeah,
for the most part.
Well, yeah. We did it in August so that if you wanted to make a change, we'd have time to do the RFP. Because if you wait until December or January, then you don't have it. Then we'll be changing consultants in the middle of session. So that's why we did August.
But we're not.
For two-year contracts. So, no, that's what I expired in. You can always do 2 years from now on if you want.
Okay. Well, I think just given where we're positioned with Eric, I think we're very happy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And he's our only advocate in D.C.
Right.
Yes.
As opposed to in the past, we had up to three.
Right.
So I think Kathy has a good point. Maybe it should be a two-year term to match the legislative session.
Okay.
It's just less paperwork.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't have a problem with doing that with the state either. I knew there were some questions and John wasn't here, so I didn't do that. But I don't think there's even been a question on this one, correct? Okay. Yeah. I'll move for the contract.
For Eric and also for
the state.
Yeah, let's do it proper. Let's do the federal one and then we'll go back to the state. We'll have to reopen that. So for the state one, Kathy makes a motion for a two-year contract. I will second that motion. And clerk, if you can call the roll.
For the federal, right?
For the federal, yeah, federal. No, federal.
We've got him spinning right now because of me, sorry.
Okay, roll call. Director Bilodeau?
Yes.
Director Yo?
Yes.
Director Wigand?
Yes.
Director Green?
Yes.
That motion carries 4-0.
Okay. And if we can revisit item 4 for a moment on the state legislative advocacy services. Kathy, could you refer that this be for a 2-year term?
Sure.
To match the legislative session. Okay. So then we'll reopen that up back up, and Kathy will make a motion to that effect, and I'll second it. And if Madam Clerk, you can call the roll.
Roll call, Director Bilodeau?
Yes.
Director Yo?
Yes.
Director Wigand?
Yes.
Director Green?
Yes.
That motion passes 4-0.
Okay. I'm glad we have these people locked in at this rate.
That's a
good thing. Okay. Inflation.
That's right. Great job.
Yeah, they're doing a really good job.
And it's smart to match it to the list.
Okay, that will bring us to item number 6, which is the Children's Water Educational Festival update.
Great. Thank you, Chair Bilodeau. We have Danny Birch, who's going to provide an update on the Children's Water Education Festival. Here it goes.
Yeah, you're
not sure.
Oh,
okay.
Oh.
Thank you, Letitia.
Okay, yay, I did it. Okay, I'll go ahead and advance it. Hello, everyone. So I'll just give a quick update on the Children's Water Education Festival. For background, as you know, this is our largest event. It's a field trip for third, fourth, and fifth graders, and 2025 will be the 28th year that we've had this event. So we've actually welcomed over 150,000 students so far, and last year over 5,000. So currently, staff is researching venues for the 2025 festival. We've looked at over 60 different locations all across the county. And we're really looking for something that can meet the unique needs of the festival, which is really just having a large space to accommodate all the people that we have, and then also having enough space for parking, having privacy for the safety of the students, having gate availability where schools can attend, and then for them to be willing to host the event. So with that, we narrowed our list of 60 to 3. So the first being UC Irvine, Huntington Beach Sports Complex, and then Oak Canyon Park. So UC Irvine is where we hosted the event for over 10 years, since 2013. It's a great space, big space with classrooms available, and we've really enjoyed hosting it there. But unfortunately, there have been some things that have come up recently, including pending construction for 2025, making us unsure if we'll even be able to host the event there, as well as increasing costs in recent years and insurance requirements that will also be costly and having just very strict restrictions. So then we've been looking at two other options, including Huntington Beach Sports Complex. This is just a huge sports facility with a lot of space. Unfortunately, it's not the park-like feeling that we would like, and it doesn't have the classrooms or indoor space. And then also, we're kind of questioning if they have enough parking available there.
That's a big question.
And then the third option that we're looking into is Oak Canyon Park, also a really large flat space that we can use. And it's actually owned by James Events, who they provide all the event services for the festival. And they've done it for a really long time. They're very familiar with our event. And they actually have another location that before we got kind of bigger, we used their venue, Hidden Valley, for 10 years and had very successful events there. So they also have large space. They definitely have enough parking, and it's a private location. They just don't have the classrooms, obviously. So for next steps, we're just going to continue to coordinate with those three locations, kind of get estimates from them, see what dates they have available. And then for UCI, in order to see if we can kind of meet some of those struggles and find solutions, we're meeting with them on August 22nd. And thank you, Director Wigand, for your help with that. He'll be joining as well. So we'll see if we can kind of work with them on that. And then we'll just kind of start getting information from the schools to plan for registration opening and bring the recommendations of location, date, and event services to the September meeting. And that concludes the festival presentation, unless there's any questions.
I don't have any questions, but I appreciate working with UCI to try to figure out, hopefully they're not doing any of the construction stuff, mm-hmm. and then we can then kind of nail down, as we discussed, their costs of gone up, and I think it was from a lack of some of the folks knowing how to interconnect the two governmental agencies. And now that Alberto is kind of paying attention, I think his desire is to go to several departments and maybe try to get them, they all have budgets, and get them to maybe write a $10,000 check to kind of cover and offset these higher costs. So while as they might not discount the parking or discount the certain things, those departments could write checks to us to sponsor a component of the event. And seeing that we hire a lot of UCI guys, that I think that nexus is the greatest connector. And it, there's a lot more shade that the one in orange looked like it might be a good site, but it like it could get kind of hot out there.
Yeah.
There's a lot of trees in the UCI location that it does kind of keep the somewhat cooler.
Yeah.
And then if you got a bunch of kids and their parents there,
yeah.
Getting them griping about heat. But yeah, I think that if we could get those departments to get that buy-in, then that kind of lowers our cost.
Yeah.
And that makes it helpful. But that interconnectivity partnership is something that Alberto really wants to emphasize with his chancellor and the folks to say that, hey, this is a good working balance.
Yeah.
But the costs, I think, were ridiculous last time. So that was the unfortunate thing that kind of cut us all off guard.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But like even the restrooms, like if he can get the keys to use the college's bathrooms instead of
bring in those porta potties. Well, then there's an additional cost savings that we could bring to the table, and a few other things to work around that and then interconnect that better.
Yeah, that would be great. Thank you for
your help. That meeting on that day, kind of try to hammer out some of those details. At least we'll know if they're really doing the construction or not.
That will be great to have.
If that is the impact, then we really do need to look for that secondary site.
Yeah.
And did you check at the sports center in Huntington Beach? Did you check the library to see about using those rooms downstairs as classrooms?
We haven't coordinated with the library yet. We're kind of coordinating with them right now.
I blame you right now, but okay.
Yeah, but that's definitely something we can look into. Yeah, that's good.
I'm not pushing for, but I'm saying
it is right there. Yeah.
Yeah. You can, you know, we probably could do something about that, and we can all reach out to Huntington Beach for help on that. But I do think UCI is probably superior.
Yeah. As long as they're not doing the construction.
Yeah. It's a great location other than the construction and then the price. Yeah.
But there's got to be at least 4, maybe 5 departments that could write that $10,000 check that could offset some of those problems. Yeah, that's what Alberto thinks would be the connector.
Okay.
You just go to the department heads and say, hey, you know, chemistry guys and, you know, biology guys, and there's all these different departments that would interconnect with all the things we do here.
Okay. Nice. And that would reduce the price back down to something that we can handle.
I think once we receive all the estimates from the different locations, we'll have to see kind of where that offsets and what that allows in our budget still, because we haven't gotten pricing from them for this year yet.
Got it. I thought they had told us that this year was going to be quite high.
We just know what it's intended to increase each year, so we're estimating based on that. But I'm sure it will be high. It was high last year, so that would be.
Yeah, it's really unfortunate they couldn't just waive the parking.
I know.
If the school's not in session that week, it's spring break, mm-hmm. so you would think, you know, for some reason, you know, well, we all know governments need their money, and that's what this is, a department that, you know, state of California will try to cut. So they're like, well, we don't want to lose that opportunity to raise revenue. Make some money off of charging for parking.
Wow, that's too bad.
Yeah.
Just my two cents. Irvine's obviously the preferred location. I think this is probably the children's first exposure to a college campus, which I think is an important element. And I'm an anteater, so. I did meet with Alberto like 8 years ago about this Eleanor Torres and I, who's Gina's predecessor, and we thought we made some headway, but apparently we didn't. but struggle continues. So hopefully we can.
Well, he's now assistant vice chancellor, so
he's moved up.
Anybody know the chancellor?
I mean, I'm sure we could find.
I don't know that it'd do any good, but worth a try if anybody knows.
Yeah, at that time, Alberto was just. State
right.
government affairs at that point.
Yeah, and Lee Bronski was there too.
Yeah,
he was federal.
So, and then Alberto got promoted twice, and then now he's the assistant vice chancellor. So I think he has more stake now.
Okay,
to try to interconnect that.
Perfect.
Okay.
Thank you for the update. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, appreciate finding out too. Those other venues sometimes.
It's good to have options.
Yes. Okay. That was an informational item. That brings us to item number 7, which is the Water Summit update.
Thank you, Chair Bilodeau. This is informational as well. So the 2024 summit is going to happen on Friday, September 27th at the West and South Coast Plaza. We do partner with MODOC to host this event, and this year they're taking the lead. A theme and a program have been set, so registration has opened. We have 72 registrants so far and almost 25,000 in sponsorship. So I believe Letitia or Christina will send an email to the board so that you all can register if you are able to attend. You've seen this slide before, but this is a copy of the 5 planned sessions with the lunch keynote being Steve Garvey. He has confirmed that he will attend if he doesn't have anything else in his schedule. So we hope that will transpire. And then these are the other 4 sessions.
I thought Mark Holt said no.
as of yesterday with Damon, I did reach out, and he did not have any update.
Yeah.
He said from the last meeting, they hadn't gotten on with him yet. So as of now, he's still invited, but he's not confirmed.
Oh, okay.
But we'll be sure to follow up, and we have this on the website as well. So we'll continue to keep the board apprised. And that's it for Summit, unless there's any questions.
Questions? Great. Thank you for the update. Item 9, Public Affairs Outreach Report.
Great. Thank you, Chair Bilodeau. So this Public Affairs Outreach Report is for the months of June and July, since we didn't have a meeting last month. So we continue to have a very robust tour and speakers bureau program, as well as doing our construction outreach for maintenance projects like the barrier, and then supporting some of our PFAS notifications for different treatment plants throughout the county. And then we continue to try to expand our chamber outreach as well. So we're tracking chambers, some of the chamber events, attending those, requesting to have OCWD as a speaker. So most recently, John and Director Wagon attended Wake Up Newport. That was a well-received presentation on water. Legislative engagement for the past 2 months, we did have the tour with the EPA Acting Assistant Administrator over at the Anaheim Linda Vista PFAS treatment plant, and that coincided with the ACE conference that was going on in Anaheim. And then President Green, John, and Lisa Haney were over at UCI, and that was a presentation that was assembled by Diane Dixon regarding sediment and trying to get that sand to the coastal communities in Orange County. So that started a lot of synergy. It was a great movement, and there continues to be a lot moving forward on this effort. For media and stakeholder engagement, the months of June and July were quite high. They were combined, and so there was like a 600% increase from May. So not only is it because it was 2 months, but we did receive a lot of great media coverage as well as social media. So for our media, here are some of the highlights. We had the beach replenishment story that Lisa spoke at the UCI conference that came out in the Register.
It was great.
Yes, that was it's a great hysterical presentation. Mm-hmm. And then we had John with the CBS affiliates. And then here are a couple of our upcoming stories. Jason and Ben Smith, our director of research operations, were interviewed by NPR for an upcoming story. Jason spent about 2 days with the reporter. So we're hoping to see a story come out about PFAS and kind of OCWD leading the way. Should come out this weekend. The thought was that they were going to have a series of segments that come out along the way and really speak to the OCWD's leadership and helping other agencies come up with a plan like that to meet EPA's guidelines. Oh, and I forgot to mention the Megan, our director of research, who presented at the board meeting last night. She's going to come out and probably won't come out, Crystal, till like next year probably, but it's Mission Unstoppable. So this is with Miranda Cosgrove. And they feature female in STEM, so kind of for like kind of young teenage females. And so they featured Megan as a PhD, as our director of research, and then really focused on the GWRS. So it's going to be a positive story highlighting OCWD and our world-renowned project, but also females in science careers. So we'll keep the board apprised. Like with all of our social media, we try to look for trends to capitalize on to increase our social media engagement and impressions. So the team has done a great job of doing some Olympics posts that have done quite well. And then we also celebrated OCWD's 91st. But we continue to use Ginny Groundwater, and that's our intern, Angel Ahn, who dresses up as Ginny. She has a fun time creating these videos. So as you can see, the monthly impressions, the number of folks that are looking at these posts were quite high, and it is about a 79% increase from last time we reported this. So we do continue to grow our social media engagement. You
should play off the River Seine versus
our water's cleaner.
That's a good idea. And then finally, I just wanted to note, I have mentioned before, Public Affairs is working with IS to kind of redesign or refresh our website. We do have a new content management system. So this is the old website on the right, and this is what we are working on right now here on the left. So having a larger hero image and just really making it streamlined information, things that are easily accessible. So you'll see changes going through the website. We also are looking at kind of national website best practices and making sure we're complying with that, making sure it's an accessible site. So if you have any feedback or issues, please do let me know. And that concludes my presentation, unless there are any questions.
Okay. Seeing no questions. These items will all be placed on the consent calendar. Are there any director's announcements or reports? Director Yo, or that's just a thumbs up. That's a thumbs up.
I don't know what that one was.
Any general manager announcements or reports, sir?
Nothing to report.
Okay, then we are adjourned. Very good.